Hello, welcome to this special Independence Day edition of the Big Five. So in just a couple of days, the nation turns 70. Well, India is an independent country, turns 70. The nation, I guess, has been around for centuries and millennia. But it's always a good time on every Independence Day to try and take stock of how we are doing as a nation. And on the 70th birthday, all the more reason for individuals, as for the nation, always good to do a check of the health of the country. How are we doing? How have we been doing since 1947? What's the state of the nation right now? Where are we going right? Where are we going wrong? And that is what we are going to try and do with our panel and our great audience, which is out here. We're trying to get what everyone feels. We'll also be going across to many experts during the course of the show. Shyam Benegal, you know, Shashi Tharoor. We're going to get in Charu Sharma, talking about various aspects of it, of how the nation is doing. But let me just come up with some of the main points that I think we should be looking at. In the period since independence, obviously, there's a rise in India's global stature, the economy. Nobody can doubt how the economy has gained in strength. There's a certain strategic position out there. From the point of view of human development, perhaps halfway there, major strides since independence, but certain areas still to be done. You can be very happy about the fact that life expectancy has gone up. You can be very happy about the fact that, you know, infant mortality has gone down and poverty has gone down. Could it be more? Yes, of course, we can always want it to go some more. Social harmony, one of the areas where there are questions coming up right now. We're going to see whether that is something which is continuing to be as strong as it always has been. And in general, the march of the elephant at India at 70, how strong is the elephant and how fast is it actually moving? And joining us to take us through all aspects of that, great to have Pawan Khera joining us from the Congress Party. It's always a pleasure to have you with us, Pawan. Mr. Balashankar is the member of the BJP Central Committee on Training and former convener of the BJP's National Intellectual Cell. Great to have you with us. Ashutosh joining us from the Aam Aadmi Party. Ajay Shukla is going to be joining us to give us some perspective on defense and strategic matters and India's position on the global stage and whether we can defend ourselves and are the Chinese about to come in and bug us more than they're already bugging us. So all of those questions, of course. Sunil Alag is joining us. Maybe can weigh in a bit on the economy. We've been hearing a lot from the economic survey, of course, but Sunil, it'll be great to get your point of view as well. And then, as I said, a range of experts we're going to go to during the course of the show. Why don't I start off by getting a starting viewpoint from you, perhaps, Mr. Balashankar. At 70, how well or badly do you think the country is doing?
In fact, today we are a very proud nation and we are doing very well. There are so many things we can be proud of. First of all, we have a democracy and which has been sustaining for 70 years, and smooth regime changes have been taking place. And in the last 3 years, we have found tremendous transformation in economy, in society and also in politics. And what I would mention is that in the last 3 years, we have targeted programs for removing poverty, for housing for all, for Swachhta Abhiyan, and lot of things are being happening, and this major chunk of these programs are directed towards the poorest in the society.
Perhaps you're setting the stage for us. We should probably look at this. I'm going to try and break this up. How have we been doing since independence? How have we been doing the last 3 years? Maybe we can take a look at both. Pawan? Let me get you in on that.
Overall,
doing well as a nation.
No, you're right. We have to remind our friends that India was not born on May 26, 2014 as a country. We were born in 1947 as a country.
He may feel that a lot of the good things have only happened since they
Fair enough. I grant him that, but I'll still counter. So I think the way we came together as a country, a union of states, is where a fundamental solution to all the problems that have come up in the last 3-4 years lies. We came together without surrendering, without compromising on our cultural independence as states, as regions, our linguistic freedom, our freedom to practice our own religion. Now, these are the strengths. That's why we were successful in creating this union of states. Food dependence, for example, PL 480 days, when you used to get wheat from America, the food independence, now that we are surplus now. So, institution building, giving right to vote to everybody, irrespective of gender, poverty, anything.
So the middle class. I'm sensing, as was with him, I'm sensing a vague political undertone. He's saying the last 3 years in particular have been great. You're saying all of this is being built on a foundation, which is presumably the Congress and the rule. I think I'm going to come back and look at each of these subjects in turn. Ashutosh, how are we doing as a nation?
See, if you have a sense of history, we should realize in 1947 what state India was. There was a massive riot and millions, lakhs of the people were killed. There was hardly an army, there was hardly a police, and there was hardly a state apparatus. And the people like Churchill and other international experts were talking about the Indians, India cannot survive even for 5 years. And India survived not only 5 years, but it is surviving till now. So the vibrancy of Indian democracy, the robustness through which it is, the people have expressed their viewpoints, and we are now a nation to reckon with at the international level.
Yeah,
I do not agree with him that it is only because of Mr. Modi or Mr. Bikaja that India has emerged. I remember in 70s and 80s, India was just remembered as a country of snake charmers. Today, if we are considered to be the fastest economy in the world, and we are the most robust democracy in the world, it's because of the collective wisdom of India as a nation. We should recognize that there are a lot of infirmities, still there are many things which has to be done.
I think that's interestingly put. Let me just get both of you to say to weigh in on this. Look, I don't think anybody can doubt that as an experiment of the building of nationhood, here you have a country, 400 million then, 1.3 billion now, different languages, different religions, different regions, different types of people, surviving, thriving, growing, prospering, becoming a world leader, doing so in conditions of democracy, freedom, equality, you know, all of those things, in conditions of a spirit of unity. You know, we sometimes say unity in diversity as a slogan, but actually what we have achieved in these 70 years is almost an example which is unparalleled. And I think what Ashutosh is saying, I'm going to get you both to weigh in on this. He said all Indians should really be complimented for that. It's not just BJP government in the last 3 years or the Congress in previous years.
I entirely agree with him. I have not disputed with him on the subject.
It's probably the only time the BJP and the Aam Aadmi Party have agreed in the last 3 years. Okay. It underlines what he was saying, so I'm glad that you're agreeing with him.
No, but I also add that in the last 3 years, we have seen tremendous reform on the economic front, on the financial front, and also on taxation front. And this could have not have been possible earlier, and this was possible only because of the willpower that Narendra Modi has shown, and this was pending for many decades.
Okay, so all Indians deserve credit, but particularly Mr. Modi is what you are saying.
The willpower of the Indian people.
And you would say all Indians deserve credit, but particularly the Congress Party.
No. Yeah, after all, it was Indians who elected the Congress Party. We didn't get elected from Pakistan.
BJP.
So, fair enough. So it is end of the day, the people of India.
Okay. Yeah. So with all of this self-congratulations taking place, Sunil Alag, let me just drag you in on the first aspect of what we are discussing. Then I want to go into various aspects. Let's look at the economy. Let's look at social cohesion. Let's look at sport, let's look at entertainment, let's look at culture, let's look at various aspects of it. Let's start off with the most obvious thing, the state of the economy. The fact is, 1947, where was India? After 200 years of colonial oppression, and some would say colonial loot, and I'm going to get Shashi Tharoor in on this point, because that's something which he, of course, has been speaking about at great length. It was really, India was one of the most prosperous economies in the world before the British came. They destroyed it. India's bounced back. Is that one of the biggest things that you look at in these 70 years, the economic resurgence and revival of India, or are there other factors you'd point to?
No, I don't want to get into the political debate, but all I can say is that in 1947, when we began, it was more of Nehru and socialism. It was kind of a pink communism, if I could put the word in. Is that it wasn't red, so we had the family, we had 5-year plans, we had the state moving everything, and then we had to move today from an area of controlling everything to an area of empowerment. And that for me is the big change which has taken place in India, regardless of who has to take the credit. We moved away from
that process
the
really
planning model of Russia
in 1991,
to the right model, and that's
really
where
began.
We are moving forward. But, you know, we have not got rid of the license Raj fully as yet. So we have to move from controls to empowerment. I mean, maybe at that point of time, everybody felt that we needed to be controlled. Otherwise, this nation would fall apart. And today we've arrived at a stage where everybody in the younger generation wants to be empowered rather than controlled. And that is the big plus point that has taken place for India in the last 70 years.
Okay, so the economic resurgence of India. That's one point perhaps being spoken about. Shashi Tharoor, let me get you in on this, and I'm going to get you to keep your historian hat on right now, and because you've written a book on this, the fact that British rule really destroyed what was a very successful India from an economic point of view. People forget that in the early 18th century, the late 17th century, India was producing 50, sometimes 60, maybe 70% of global manufactured goods. India was riding the global economy like a colossus along with China. That was destroyed by the British. In the period since independence, we've had to rebuild that. And we've done so fairly successfully. You could argue it could have been much faster. Maybe we wasted 2-3 decades or 4 decades, but eventually India has been able to rebuild.
Absolutely. And in fact, that's exactly right, because there was this dramatic decline over 200 years. And we started off in 47 with some very bad, very, very bad numbers, which I'm going to inflict on you. Way back in 1700, we were the most prosperous economy in the world, accounting for 27% of global GDP, the richest economy in the world. But by the time the British left in 1947, we were a poster child for third world poverty, down to about 3% of global GDP. 8.8% of Indian women were literate, which meant literally one out of every 12 Indian women could read and write. And infant mortality, maternal mortality rates absolutely sky high. 35 million people dying totally unnecessary deaths and famines under British rule. That was the track record of the British. And in the 47 years till 1947, in the 20th century, our net rate of growth was 0.001%. Can you imagine? We weren't even at 1% growth of our economy. Then look at what's happened. Many of us are very critical of how inadequate our progress has been. But when you realize where we started in 1947, we've actually done not that badly in 70 years. If you just go back to the numbers I gave you all earlier, that life expectancy has gone from 27 now to 69. The literacy rate has gone from 17% to 79. The poverty line figures, it's no longer 90% of the population, it's 26%. Now we all feel that's 26% too many, but given where we were, things are very much better. Dramatic improvements in infant mortality, in maternal health, and finally, of course, a growth rate that for the last 25 years has consistently been above 6%, and for an entire decade was close to 9%. So we've really done a great deal in these 70 years to recover from where the British left us.
Shashi Tharoor, other than the economy, what are the other factors that you would be looking at when you're looking at the last 70 years of Indian independence? What really stands out for you?
Well, I think above all, the entrenching of democracy. This was a country that didn't have democracy under the British. Whatever little we got, we had to prize from the reluctant grasp of the colonial masters right up to the bitter end. And yet, in these 70 years, we've got extremely, extremely strongly entrenched democracy, which no one in India would be willing to surrender. Secondly, social change and transformation. Who could have imagined that a Dalit woman could have been chief minister of the heartland of India, Aryavrat of UP? For 3,000 years, it was unimaginable. Mayawati has been chief minister 4 times. Who could have imagined a Chaiwala son becoming prime minister? That's again possible because our democracy has given us the prospect of rising above our economic and social circumstances. And that is an extraordinary transformation as well. These are things we, I think, appreciate insufficiently. On top of that, of course, there's been good things and bad things in our foreign policy, in our defense posture, in our image around the world. But I'll single out our soft power, because I do believe that the attractive things about Indian culture, everything from yoga to Bollywood, have actually placed us in many ways on the global map. Our openness to the world, our willingness to give to the world as well as receive from it, I think mark us out. And the management of diversity, there is no country in the world that has managed diversity of the extent that India has managed while staying democratic and free. I think those are significant triumphs to look back upon.
Ajay, let me turn to you on the more strategic aspect of it. The India's position on the global stage. Now, here, I guess there'd be a bit more of a debate, because it's not as if in 1947 or the early 50s, India did not have a fairly strong position. Jawaharlal Nehru was one of the leaders of anti-colonialism. India had a fairly strong position. Sometimes we were wielding a bigger stick on the global stage than the stick we actually had, which was perhaps shown to us in 1962. How do you see India's position on the global stage then and now?
Well, as you mentioned, Nehru certainly had stature, but that was political stature. In military terms, you must remember that in 1947 itself, we got embroiled in a war with Pakistan over Kashmir. Pakistan invaded Kashmir. We were barely able to recover, you know, a certain percentage of what they had done. And the rest still remains in Pakistani hands. A couple of years later, when China invaded Tibet, when the Indian Army was given the question about whether they could intervene and help Tibet, the Army chief was forced to regretfully conclude that he just didn't have the troops to. As a result of that, Tibet remains now in Chinese control. Today, we're a very different kettle of fish now. Today, when China walked into Doklam, the Indian Army was able to go there and confront them on behalf of Bhutan, leave alone Tibet. So even able to protect a smaller ally, the United States is actively seeking Indian cooperation to patrol the reaches of the Indian Ocean.
You could argue that some of our rivals and our enemies, if you can call them that, or let's say the threats,
adversaries,
have also become much stronger in these 70 years. The Chinese, far stronger today than they were 70 years ago. Pakistan didn't have nuclear weapons earlier and could never really hope to win a conventional war with India. Today, it does have nuclear weapons, so at least to that extent, it thinks it has deterrence against India. Despite that, you would think that India is strategically far stronger today.
Well, India is strategically far stronger because military strength rides directly on economic strength. You only can spend a percentage of what you make and earn and create in terms of country's wealth. So India has done well economically compared to some countries, but less well compared to a country like China. So that is why the Chinese military has turned out to be grown. It has grown in more exponential terms, in greater bounds than the Indian military. But even so, the question that we always keep in mind as a poor country is what proportion can we spend on the military? And in that respect, I think we've struck a very good balance between development and creation of armed strength.
Ashutosh.
See, what Ajay has said, I think we should realize that China has moved much ahead than us. But at what cost? China was continuously at war with itself from 1912 to 1976. Millions of people have died. Either they were killed or they were starved. Thankfully, India had not to go through that. So Indian achievement in that sense is much
better. That's of course a loss of liberty in China. But how many people here would really want that sort of prosperity without freedom? I mean, you know.
There is no political freedom in China, even now. The issue is that democracy has its own pace. Dictatorship has its own pace. Let's not forget, since Mao took over in China in 1949, till now, the Chinese state is basically a military state. It's an army state. It's a red army. So their military will always be powerful.
And the same is true for Pakistan, by the way.
I think India as a nation is too big to get fixated by Pakistan.
No, you shouldn't. I completely agree with you. I
think there's no comparison.
You've got to compare with China, not with Pakistan. Okay, the economy part of it and the strategic and the defense and the military part of it. What would be your take?
In fact, talking about economics, the students of economics will know there is a famous Madison's Log, you know, in which in the early 18th century, India and China together had almost 60% of the GDP of the world. And this is a world study. And these two countries were continuously having this domination on world economy for almost 2000 years. So when the British left India, we were at the lowest 1.2%, and that was the case with China also. And till 78, we continued the same trajectory. And afterwards, China leaped forward, and now we started again catching up. Today, India is the fastest growing economy, and India's basic strength, some of the even American economists say that our strength is better than that of Chinese because we are a democracy, our economics, our statistics are all transparent, and Chinese, we don't know, nobody knows what is the truth about it. And so India is catching up, India is emerging as a huge economic power.
And it's possible that this could proceed for a period of time because there's a lot of people who are feeling that by 2040,
yes,
India will be among the top three economies
in the world, yes.
From an economic point of view. Pavel, let me get you in and then I'm going to go back to some of our other
issues. When we started out, there was hardly any middle class. We had a lot of poverty, handful of millionaires. right now, and we have a robust middle class which actually decides the direction of this country. Poverty is definitely come down, and the fundamental reason why we are doing well is also the idea. What was the idea of India? It was not that there is an enemy there and we have to come together and fight. Had there been no colonialism, I don't think England would have been one country, it would have been four or five countries. So it was a positive thing of nation building. Therefore we came together, therefore we've achieved what we've achieved. Without a threat, there is an external enemy. Pakistan, on the other hand, needs an India to be together. We don't need anybody else to be together.
I think that's an interesting point, and again underlining a lot of what has been achieved in the last 70 years. Without having to point fingers at anybody else, without wanting to fight with somebody, you've still been able to grow and grow in these conditions. There's no reason why India cannot and should not be among the top two or three economies in the world in the next 20 to 30 years, in a sense reclaiming what has been its traditional position through most of human history. Unless we mess it up, which is always a possibility.
I fully agree with what all the other panelists are saying, except I think I would like to point out one weakness that has taken place over the last decade is that earlier the country, the political system worked towards everything of connected with nation building. What we have seen in the last decade, and I blame all the parties, please, right now, BJP, Congress, everyone, we seem to be seeing a collapse of that taking place where everybody now opposes for the sake of opposition. So if we are to become a strong economic nation, and if we have economic policies which are not opposed for the sake of opposition, I think we will move much faster than what we've done so far. And we've got to understand this. This is walkouts and not having parliament functioning, and all that has to stop. I mean, we've actually degenerated in that area where there's been no growth. Actually, we've gone down. And this is where I think we need to pull ourselves up again and say, look, here you are. We were terrific. We want to become better. It's about time even the politicians we elect work together for the nation rather than just opposing each other for the heck of it.
Nikhil Jay, let me get you in on this, because another area where some people will feel has been the greatest strength of what India has achieved in these 70 years is what many of our panelists have spoken to. Growing, rising, developing, could have been faster, but still managing to do a lot of that, and yet doing it in conditions of, by and large, remarkable social cohesion, harmony, communities not at each other's throats, democracy, freedom, liberty, all of those factors. Would you agree that that's perhaps been one of the highlights, which is as important as the economic growth or the strategic rise?
Yeah, so I'd first like to say that I am a dissenting voice on what the impact of that growth has been. That there has been growth, there can be no doubt about it. But the fact is that in 2016, India is one of the most unequal countries in the world. In fact, it's evaluated as being the second most unequal after Russia. We have the richest 1% of our country that owns 60% of the wealth, and the top 10% own 80% of the wealth. What's left for the people at the bottom? And that's why we still are at the top of the statistics in global malnutrition, stunted children, maternal mortality, infant mortality, child mortality. So all this celebration comes with a huge cost. And I think that is something very important. It is true that we have had social cohesion, and that is something being threatened right now. There are parts of our country and communities in our country who are feeling insecure.
Throwing that open to all of you, he is saying that social cohesion and that sense of freedom, which was the high point of India all these 70 years, he's now saying is starting to come under threat. Would you agree with that?
See, there are real dangers, because India could progress as a democracy, as a world superpower, only when we have an inclusive political system or inclusive social system. Unfortunately, today, unity and diversity is under threat. We have to accept the fact. The second point which is very important is that institutions over a period of time has become very powerful in India. But there are very, very serious attempts to subvert these institutions, including judiciary. That is the point number two. If institution will not grow, if the cult of personality becomes so big, that means there is something fundamentally wrong with us. After Nehru, there was a debate, who after Nehru? But I think the best time India had, not in as many words, but Narasimha Rao. He was not a leader to be reckoned with, but India survived. India survived Manmohan Singh, and not only survived, but thrived. India took a paradigm shift from 1991 onwards. And today, if we are recognized...
Narasimha Rao, I think, will eventually history will judge him a lot more kindly than the Congress
Party. He was not a charismatic leader. He was not a charismatic leader.
Yeah, and I think history will eventually judge him a lot more favorably than the Congress has tended to do, with economic reform, sorting out Punjab, sorting out, you know, getting Assam into some sort of control. So, yes. Sunil Alag, would you agree with what Ashutosh was saying and Nikhil Day was perhaps hinting at, that some of that social cohesion and all is another area which is under threat? You are saying that that consensus on the economy has been under a threat. What about areas like this?
See, for me, patriotism is defined as someone who loves his country and is ready to defend it. So anyone who is not a patriot, I'm against. But nationalism is something where you decide that you are going to take patriotism to an extreme. The danger is when you start mixing religion with nationalism, and that is what has to be prevented at all costs. Because if you start linking nationalism and religion together, that's when you start crumbling. Now, at this stage of the game, we haven't reached that stage as yet. And we need to sort of control. It's the people who will do it. As far as I'm concerned, it's not the politicians. They can try and divide all of us. They can try and do whatever they want to. But it's for the people. For instance, today, I'm just asking a very simple question to all of them, to everybody. When there's this Vande Mataram, which has to be made compulsory to be sung in all schools. I mean, that's what I've been reading in Maharashtra. And I think the center is wanting it. Nobody is asking the children whether they want to sing it or not. It's the elderly people who are saying, I don't want to sing it. Somebody saying, I will sing it. Then they are being questioned, do you know it or not? I mean, this is becoming an irrelevant situation. It's about time the adults
stop meddling with. By the way, I tend to agree with you. I'm going to get the others in. It's almost sad that the symbols of patriotism and nationalism, they should not become political signals. By the way, nationalism and patriotism is not something that you should
absolutely
be shouting at people
or religious
about.
Based or religion based, anything.
It should not be religion based. It should not be foisted on anybody at the barrel of a gun. It's certainly not something you should shout at people about from television studios, as is unfortunately happening, deciding who's a nationalist and who's not a nationalist. I would think every Indian, Ajay, let me get you in on this and I'm going to get the others in. Every Indian, or 99.9% of Indians who love their country, are patriotic. They love it. You feel that sense of pride. You feel the goosebumps when the national anthem plays. It doesn't have to be foisted upon anyone.
No, I could not agree less. I think that...
Could not agree less or more?
I could not agree less.
Okay.
I think that this India, the picture that we are painting over here of this happy society living in peace and harmony with each other and so on, is somewhat overblown. I think that an India, our greatest national security threat is internal. We are a multicultural, multi-ethnic country, multi-religious, divided along all kinds of lines. And if any of those fissures are exploited or deepened, our national security is threatened to a far greater degree than China or Pakistan could ever threaten.
I completely agree with you. Completely agree with you. Which is why, actually, you are underlining what Sunil Alag is saying, and which I was also alluding to.
I agree entirely with
you. Therefore, you should not be sitting and saying, you've got to do X, Y, Z in the name of nationalism or with a gun to your head, because it could deepen the fissures. You can't, for example, say that one community is anti-national just because it belongs to...
I also disagree with the portrayal of China that was done. That China is, it's had to pay too heavy a price. It's had to surrender its freedom and so on. Business of freedom and liberty is normally idealized and idolized by people with very full stomachs. When you're hungry, you're looking at your government to lift you out of poverty. You're willing to pay a certain price for that.
Really?
And China is a classic example of a country where the government's ability to lift its people out of poverty has created so much patriotism and nationalism in that country today. Ask anyone who travels to China, as you probably do. They're all intensely proud of their country. So let's not make ourselves look good by putting down China.
Hang on. You are saying people would be willing to give up some of their liberties if they could have faster
growth? Please ask somebody who's got a hungry child sitting next to his thing whether he wants food,
you know,
employment and poverty alleviation, or he wants democracy.
Maybe you're right. But we've just been celebrating, the X anniversary of emergency. During emergency, there was growth, trains were running on time, all of that was there. When it came to a vote on liberty, people voted in a particular manner.
No, but that's because we didn't even do emergency properly. We can't even do totalitarianism properly, leave alone democracy.
Wow. Vikram, okay. Who wants to debate this? A little bit of totalitarianism would not be bad if it could get economic growth faster. You're not saying that. I know you're not saying that. Ajay is giving bad ideas to my friend in the BJP.
I hope he doesn't take it seriously.
No, I'm about to come to him.
Because I very humbly beg to differ with him, because the kind of people he had interacted with in the China, they are not politically free people. Their mind is not free. So obviously they will say what the Communist Party of China wants them to say. So let's not get confused about the issues. I know, because I, being a student of China, I can tell you that how Jiang Zemin was working and how Hu Jintao was working and what kind of reform is better. The point is simple. Today there is a simmering social conflict in China which can explode any moment.
Let's look at China. I mean, I get the Chinese example, but I just want to come back to India and see whether there's anything in that, in what he says. Should we say, okay, now looking forward, grow a little faster, solve some of the issues that Nikhil Dev was saying? Doesn't matter if some of our freedoms are given up.
Again, yeah, our freedoms are under threat. Now, most of our governments survived despite fault lines. This government wants to survive depending on the fault lines. Now, that's the biggest threat we are facing right now. I think we need to stop. Now, please do not invoke mythical internal enemies and don't treat the Indian Muslim as an extension of Pakistan. Now, that's the greatest threat we are facing today.
Okay. So,
Kashmir pyara hai, Kashmir jai bhaad mein.
Okay, theek hai. Let me ask you. First of all, is this government thriving on internal differences and on deepening internal fissures?
Internal rivalries are not built by our party. When we came to power, Narendra Modi government did a survey of the state of the Indian economy. And we found that 1% of the population in the country is holding 58% of the total wealth of this country. And the lowest 10%, the poorest 10% is having 0.2% of the economic share. So what we did, we tried to totally transform the economy in such a way through demonetization and through GST and through banking inclusions and giving modern chula to poorest of the society. We are actually transforming the disparities into an advantage for this country. And we, for the first time, targeted programs are being implemented for eliminating the disparity in the society and creating one India. That is where we are working, and that is the change that this government has brought about.
You didn't entirely answer this question, but Nikhil Dev, let me get you in on this. You were saying that it's not quite that rosy a picture, seeing as inequalities are on the rise and a lot of the poorest of the poor are still left out. And by the way, if you see the statistics, yes, massive, massive improvement since 1947. But you have to say that in 2017, it's still a matter of some sadness that so many children are still dying because of infant mortality. So many people are still going to sleep at night, poor and hungry and waiting for their next meal. Those numbers are still somewhat disappointing. The number of people still practicing open defecation. So those are still numbers that need a lot of work. Ajay rather was, you know, sort of controversially put forward the thesis that in China, people would not have minded giving up so much some of their liberties if it means dragging people out of poverty. And maybe that's the same in India. What do you think? You work so closely with the poorest of the poor.
Absolutely not. I think there is no doubt that it is a fact that you can speak out. Democracy has actually, in India, China may be a different situation, democracy has allowed us to be able to get the voice of the poor out, and whatever that they have managed to go get, and whatever share of these resources they've managed to demand, is because of democracy. Our social cohesion and our problems that exist between communities, I completely agree with him that our biggest threats are internal, because we are such a diverse society. If we don't remain inclusive, if we don't listen to the voice of dissent, if we don't give space to that, we will completely break apart. And the fact that the BJP says that yes, 1% is being cornered by 60% of the country, that is a big threat. But what do? They cut the social sector budget. Today, we have so little being spent on education, on health, on our Anganwadi program is cut almost in half. We can't do it simply by saying demonetization or GST. That does not bring basic services to the poor. So whether it's the poor or it's minorities or it's vulnerable communities, we have to compare ourselves in spending, one last point, with countries like China, Russia, BRICS countries, If we look at our neighbors, they have made much more progress than us in the since 1947.
Okay, but you're saying that the poor would still not want to give up their liberty. At the end of the day, the right to vote is still as dear to them as that as a faster growth rate.
And I want to say one more thing, please. I want to say that today we should look at, for instance, Narmada. We have a dam that's going to give benefits to one set of people, but a whole 40,000 families are sitting there with its leader in jail. Are we going to talk to them, or are we going to celebrate what we are giving in terms of development to another side?
Okay.
This is something extremely important to think about as Independence Day comes.
All right, Nikhil Date, thank you so much for joining us with that perspective. I'm just going to turn very, very briefly now to the audience and get their take. You know, first of all, what is it? I just want to get a sense from all of you. What is it that you're the proudest of in the country right now? What is it that you would be the most concerned about? You've heard what many of the experts feel. What do all of you feel?
For me, for 70 years of independence, what would concern me is a sense of identity that is emerging. I think right now the identity that's emerging is based on a lot of binaries. Like, I completely disagree with Mr. Shukla when he says that we can either choose poverty or, you know, certain political rights.
I
think you've painted me as an autocrat, which is completely not what I said.
No, but
you
I
are
mean,
now the person who has officially said democracy should be.
I'm Chairman Mao.
Yeah, Chairman Mao the second. Yeah. Chairman Shukla.
No, I never said that. Yeah, I just said that China.
Chairman Shukla has got things to why he wants democracy to be banned and everyone to be dragged away to the concentration
camp. The long march first.
To make them happier. Okay, okay. Clarify what you were saying.
What I was saying was, there were two different things I was saying. One was the issue of binaries and internal security, and the other issue was that democracy and freedom tends to be valued higher by people with full stomachs than if you were to go to some village in, let's say, a tribal village in Odisha and ask them, would you want jobs, food, security, or do you want democracy? A lot of them would say, you know, we only use our vote to throw out the government because it's failed to give us anything in the past so far. But if you're giving us something, we'll be probably willing to regiment a little higher.
Okay. Chairman Shukla, you clarified your position. Hail. Now let's move on. Gentlemen there.
Like in 70 years, we are talking about that we have gained something, but what we have lost something is the definition of nationalism. Like from the Nehruvian nationalism, we have come to a narrow-minded nationalism where the incidence of lynching has increased. So after 70 years, we need to concentrate on what we have lost instead of thinking, we should have a thinking of rationalism.
Okay, I'm going to have to pause it here for the moment, because let's just shift the focus a little bit. We've done a lot of conversations on the economy and on politics and the rest of it. Let's just hear in from a couple of experts on other areas which are really important from a sense of how the country is done. Take sports, for example. You know, some of the things we talk about nationalism sometimes, you sometimes wonder how is the country doing in other areas like sport. That perhaps is something which leads to a feeling of nationalism a lot more than anybody else. Being joined by a special expert, Charu Sharma. Put your hands together for him. Charu, win for us. How do you think India has been doing in the sporting field in the last 70 years? How do you think we managed? Because few times when people are waving the flag more than when they're cheering for India.
Well, Vikram, we have to be a little generous when we see the world of sport in India, because we have to, of course, see it after independence when India became a proper republic. And there were just so many pressing problems that sport quite naturally took a back seat. Because even now we are struggling with so many social and cultural problems. People don't have enough food to eat. There are millions and millions of poor people. So seeing it in that context, you know, sport hasn't done too badly. Of course, it's accelerated in the last 15, 20 years or so, once India's seen a bit of prosperity. But the first 50 years were really very poor sports-wise, because there was no real support for it. You might argue that cricket did rather well, and it did, because cricket being a colonial kind of, input into India, did have a fair level of support in the early days of the century, as well as, of course, as soon as we got independence, plenty of people were happy to associate themselves with a sport which was considered elitist, if I can use that term. So yes, it did get a fair amount of support, and then it turned professional soon enough. There was a lot of commerce that attached itself to it. If we were to draw a simple conclusion or an equation from that, commercial support is, sadly, whether people like it or not, the most important ingredient of success in the world of sport.
Yeah, so Charu, commercial support, obviously one of the things that has been underlying the success of sports. So maybe this is something which we as a country and the government should pay a lot more attention to, because when we are talking about nationalism and patriotism, isn't that the best way to unleash patriotic spirits? Because it happens so naturally. You just got to see what happens to the country when India is playing any country for that matter, and especially Pakistan in, you know, cricket or hockey or whatever it is.
Well, of course you make an important point. I mean, sport, not just in India, around the world, any country, is a very high profile activity. And which is why if a country does well in sport, internationally, it's seen with a different light, with great respect. I don't think the founding fathers of India were really too concerned about sporting development in India or our international image. I'm not too sure. But I don't think there was a realization of those who were leaving the country for the first 30, 40 years that sport could achieve all that internationally. Yes, it brings a nation together. I think that was witnessed in the 70s, 80s, when people started paying attention to a lot more sport. And also, Vikram, the role of the media has played a very important role in the last 20 years or so.
Then the media...
Because there has to also be dissemination of information.
And I think that media factor has been particularly important in making sports and newer sports come up, like Kabaddi, which of course you played a major role in. Traditional Indian sports also coming about the minute you get far more media attention. So that, I think, is one of the other transformations that we are starting to see now.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm a little biased when we start talking about Kabaddi, but I was very pleased that it's now got the respect and standing that it deserves. Yes, it is our own unique heritage sport and is done rather well internationally, but there was just no media for it. There was no real support, and most importantly, as we keep mentioning, no commercial support. So by offering a little bit of sophistication through the Pro Kabaddi League and, of course, the advent of commercial support, the sport has suddenly taken off. It's blossomed. And once again, emphasizing that the minute commerce flows into a sport, when people are rewarded for all their blood, sweat and tears, I think the whole young population takes to it. They've got lots of heroes. They see a light at the end of the rainbow, and the sport does take off.
All right, Charu, thanks for joining us with that perspective. Just want to jump to one more theme before we come and get final closing comments. Let's turn to entertainment, because frankly, when we're talking about what are the things that are binding us together as India, well, we've been discussing politics and the economy and the rest of it. We discuss sports. What about entertainment? Few things really bind us together as a nation more than cinema, Bollywood, Indian cinema and all sorts of it. So great pleasure to welcome one of the legends, one of the doyens of Indian cinema, Shyam Benegal, joining us. Sir, thank you so much for being with us. We've been just talking about how cinema is one of the things that binds us together as Indians. How would you see how that process of cinema has rolled itself out in these 70 years?
Even before India became independent, Indian cinema was always in the hands of people who were Indians. Now, we always saw films made for the cinemas as being entertainment. And usually, by and large, they tended to be apolitical. But we have developed what one might call, you know, over a period of time, pre-1947 or even after 1947, till about the 60s or 70s, we had a cinema that was very distinctly Indian. Because our stories always had, started with songs and dances and that sort of thing.
Mr. Benegal, I just wanted to ask you, the global impact of Indian cinema, has it been what you think it could have been? We've seen Dangal doing very well in China, but do you think India could have been playing a much larger role in cinema over these 70 years?
Well, let's say we've started to develop or become part of the international form of cinema. We are more or less in step with international cinema in a sense.
Yeah.
But of course, we do have very definite Indian characteristics in our films, which is a very interesting part of the story, you know, because the whole idea of becoming part of international cinema itself was a very interesting process, you know. From very typical kind of Indian form of cinema, we've become more or less an international, part of the international kind of film. Yet, we do have Indian characteristics. I mean, there's no way you can mistake a film made in India or an Indian film as being anything else but an Indian film.
All right, Mr. Benegal. So, sports, entertainment, some of the other areas have been performing a big role. Next 5 years for India, what would you like to see?
What I would like to see in the next 5 years is some addressing of the problems of the people who will not be celebrating Independence Day this year. There are large parts of India that feel that they are not a part of India, that feel neglected. J&K, Manipur, Nagaland. I think that just because they are outside the political mainstream, just because they don't have a lot of votes in the states that they, that these problems exist in, I think it's a national failing across parties to not have purposefully addressed
reach
the problems
out to
of
the
these
regions
people.
Which are feeling outside the mainstream. That's what you are saying should be
I
the,
don't
the
think,
agenda.
And I'm talking even for J&K, I don't think there is any part of this country that cannot be won over to the idea of India. The idea of India is just a beautiful idea. But neglecting them, mistreating them, treating them like they don't exist, that's something we have to change. And it's across parties that is failing.
Nikhil Jay, let me get you in, because I guess what Ajay said in a slightly different context of what you were saying also, include the people who are left out of the process of development that we've been seeing so far.
Yeah, we have much to be proud of, which is in terms of democracy. It's interesting that Ajay said we don't need democracy. We need it. We need that inclusion. We need that reaching out to that last person. I couldn't agree with him more. To those people who are not celebrating Independence Day to get today. We need to say that India will be India if the last person feels they are strongly a part of this country, invested in it, and the rest of the country is investing in them. So let's think about those at the margins. If you add them up, they are actually the mainstream. And those of us who speak in English and exist in this world, there are too many people outside this particular who have slogged for the country, but who are not actually being looked at. I think let's look at them and let's look at what they've contributed to this country and take that forward. They have contributed a huge amount to the democracy and to everything else. Let's take that forward.
All right, let me, Sunil Alag, your agenda for the next 5 years.
Look, as far as I'm concerned, I think the older generation needs to, you know, just step out, because the younger generation, what do they want? They want jobs, they want lack of corruption, and there should be zero, but it's impossible. And then they want law and order. Any government that moves forward and takes these three things and makes it into an inclusive growth will work. And basically, if I can put it into one line, what the younger generation today is saying, we've got to stop this attitude of, don't you know who I am, to who the hell do you think you are? We are India, we are the young, look after us and take the future in yourself.
Okay, I'm seeing a lot of agreement from the audience, or a lot of what people are seeing across the board. Ashutosh, your agenda for the next 5 years.
See, in the last 70 years, we managed our democracy well, liberty well, economy of late we are managing well, and even diversity we have managed very well. But what we lack fundamentally? The fundamental issue is that in the last 70 years, we failed to address the issue of education. And India, with its richest civilizational heritage, when India was having Vedas and the Shankaracharya was giving sermons on the philosophy to the whole world, the other part of the world was sleeping in the darkness. India by now should have emerged as an educational superpower. But unfortunately, in the last 70 years, we did not address that. And that is the fundamental reason for India's backwardness. We cannot become economic superpower if we are not an educational superpower.
I think that's absolutely correct. And that's particularly important, because the 21st century will be the century of knowledge, and whoever controls knowledge is going to be controlling the planet. So yeah, that's I think it's well put. Your agenda next 5 years.
I think you never fall in love with a gun in your hand and put the gun on the head of your person you love. Better fall in love with me. That's a psychopath behavior. So make your country more lovable instead of forcing people to love the country.
But I think people love their country anyway.
No, don't force. Vande Mataram nahi kaha to, you're not in love with the country. Don't get too much into these symbols, you know. Just make your country lovable, each one of us, instead of forcing each other to love the country.
All right. Final thoughts from you, sir. Agenda for the next... We've heard some of what Mr. Modi was saying in Parliament is going to be the agenda for, you know, from Trump now to 2022. And who knows, it could be the BJP in power at the center for these 5 years. What do you think the agenda should be?
Yeah, we are in the
maybe
cusp
not.
Of,
okay, maybe not. Ashutosh, quickly.
We are in the cusp of a huge transformation that is taking place, and there is aspiration and hope. And the government has been able to transform this hope and aspiration into a new creative agenda for growth. And that is why I am saying we have targeted programs, and we have to remove poverty for all, and then we have to focus on, of course, as Ashutosh is saying, education is a major area. And without education, you cannot have growth. So education is a major area. And of course, then our Abhiyan are all directed towards building a new India. That is our agenda.
And hopefully we can get as much agreement in Parliament and between political parties as we have on this episode of The Big Fight, then we may actually get there and get there a lot faster. That's it on this special episode. So very happy Independence Day to all of you. I know this is a couple of days early, but hey, it's never too soon to start to celebrate freedom. And that, of course, after all, is what Independence Day is all about. You're watching The Big Fight. We'll be back next week. Bye.